I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, it's the trendiest food in America, the avocado. But how did the alligator pear rise from the pit of obscurity to the toast of the menu in just a few decades? It helps to be a superfood, loaded with heart-healthy fats, antioxidants, and low cholesterol content. Today, avocados represent an $18 billion global industry, with Mexico producing about half of the world's supply. And that has attracted unwanted attention from the cartels, giving rise to the term blood avocado. There's also concern about the growing environmental impact and water demands of expanding avocado orchards. Are you an avocado addict? What's your secret for incredible guacamole? Have you been able to cultivate your own avocados? I'd love to hear about that. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Once considered exotic and rarely seen outside of certain regions like Mexico, Texas, Florida, and California, avocado has rocketed into the spotlight. From breakfast tacos to wellness smoothies to Super Bowl commercials, it's now an $18 billion global industry. And it's not just about flavor, it's also about health. And there is a dark side to the avocado. There are questions about water use, deforestation, and organized crime. So how did the avocado go from the pit of obscurity to becoming the trendiest food in America? Monique Parsons is the co-author of Green Gold, The Avocado's Remarkable Journey from Humble Superfood to the Toast of the Nation. And Monique, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much, David. It's great to be here. Really excited. Today the book hits the bookstore, so it's a really fun day to be talking to you.
It's your book's B-Day today.
It's
yes.
The B-Day.
Congratulations yes. on that.
Thank you.
Tell me, what is it, superfood? What does that mean in regards to the avocado? How super is this food?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I just want to say, first of all, that as you mentioned, I'm the co-author of this book, and I wrote it with my good friend who I grew up with in Southern California, Sarah Alaback, who's a historian. And we worked on this book for the last 4 years, sort of me as a journalist and her as a historian, putting the story together. So yes, the question of the superfood is really interesting. And that's something that, although that wasn't necessarily a term that the avocado, the passionate avocado pioneers in the early 20th century were talking about, they always, health was always a big part of the story of the avocado. And as time has gone by and sort of coming up to current day, there's a lot of money in the avocado business for marketing. And part of that is used for health studies. And so it is, I came in as a bit of a skeptic, like how could these be for you? But as I read study after study, it is really remarkable. And the big study that kind of made the biggest splash was in 2015, when the American Heart Association put out a report talking about, if you just added avocado to your diet, your cholesterol could go down no matter what else you were eating. So it is really phenomenal. There was something else I saw just yesterday about, a study out of, I believe, Finland, that if you give, if pregnant women are eating avocado, that their babies are less likely to have food allergies. So, don't take my word for it, read the study, but it just seems to be like a nonstop sort of trail of really interesting reports on the kind of good fats and such that this fruit seems
so,
to have.
So you can eat your avocado toast thinking that this is, you're doing yourself a big favor.
You feel good, yeah.
Feel good about yourself.
Yeah, it's helping you.
But I remember, though, in the 90s, avocado was not considered a superfood.
That's right.
It was only the recommended daily amount of avocado was this 1/5 of the avocado slice. It was thought to be too calorically dense and fatty when we were in that fat conscious era.
Exactly. And I think, the Hass Avocado Board, which is a wealth of information, and I can talk about the origins of that if you're interested.
Sure, but we'll get there.
They're some of the work they've done is to work with the, I guess it's the FDA. They worked on increasing that portion size because once the studies had come out about the kind of good fats that the avocado contained, they were able to increase it, I believe, to a third avocado. But yeah, back in the even, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, there started to be a lot of concern about them being fattening. And we were very entertained looking at some of the advertising campaigns for the avocado in the mid 20th century, because the California Avocado Commission in particular had, they knew that shoppers, especially women, were concerned they were fattening. So they started to run all these ads with like super skinny, sexy ladies, sort of trying to show that like, you can eat avocado, it's going to be fine. And there was a Cosmopolitan ad in the 70s with this model wearing an avocado print bikini that you could get one for yourself if you sent in a few dollars and a piece of avocado skin to the California Avocado Commission. So it was really, really something. And then Angie Dickinson, very famous actress, they had a bunch of ads for her in national publications where she was saying, "Would this body lie to you?" and holding up her little slice of avocado. So, but now they have real scientific data backing up some of this. So,
right. These were the same people that came up with like Benson and Hedges trying to market smoking
exactly.
to women.
Right. It was, as I looked at those old magazines, it's pretty shocking to see the context. Yes. Yes.
So though, I mean, what you're talking about now is, and this is very interesting because the popularity of the avocado today, of course, has a lot to do with it as a tremendous product, but it was also the victory of marketing strategies, trying to figure out ways to make their fruit relevant, their berry relevant, because the avocado is a berry. So that is, a big part of the story.
Yeah, and and to me, it's a huge amount of credit has to go to the Mexican industry, because on the one hand, our part of, the story we tell is how the avocado became such a phenomenon in the United States. And there were, from the early 20th century, starting in 1915, a group of growers in California formed, they met at this fancy hotel in Los Angeles, and they formed the California, at the time it was the California Aguacate Association. They used the Spanish word, and there was a lot of arguing later about what should this thing be called. But once there was a quarantine against Mexican avocados that was put down by the USDA.
Because of the boll weevil, the avocado
exactly.
boll
Exactly, they
weevil.
Were concerned about, there was a seed weevil, there was some kind of weevil they were very concerned about that was not found in California.
Which may have been just protectionism.
Yeah, we really dug into that and tried to figure out what it was about. And we could not find a lot of propaganda or any propaganda from that time that it was about protectionism. But I think there were definite concerns about the pests. But the result was that California was able to build up an industry without competition, except from Florida, basically. And they also had some competition from Cuba. But as far as the marketing that you mentioned, once the quarantine was dropped in the late 90s and Mexican avocados were gradually brought into the United States, the marketing that the Mexican industry has done has just been genius. I mean, they've been given awards for it, advertising awards and all sorts of things, but to sort of cultivate this love of this fruit and also, turn it into almost an iconic character. We have a chapter we called Icon.
and it also created a boon that benefited the U.S. avocado growers, because suddenly we had a reliable source of this item. It was no longer seasonal for a niche market. And and now it's everywhere, and they're all benefiting from that. So we're going to continue talking about avocados. We want to hear from our listeners. What's your favorite avocado recipe? Are you growing an avocado tree here in San Antonio? I want to know what you're doing to make that happen, because I definitely have been trying and failing consistently. But have you ever tried that avocado pit experiment? Did you ever turn that into a tree? You know, the one where you put the toothpicks in the glass of water? How did that go for you? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're talking about avocates, avocados, whatever you want to call them, alligator pears. We'll get into all these different names when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A single avocado contains over 20 vitamins and minerals, including potassium, more potassium than you would get in a banana, fiber and healthy fats. About 77% of an avocado's calories come from fat, but it's mostly heart-healthy, monounsaturated fat, the good stuff. So we're talking about avocados and how they conquered America, and we're doing that with the author of the new book, Green Gold, Monique Parsons, co-author. And so, Monique, the name situation, so they tried to call them alligator pears as if that was going to be an attractive branding. And what happened with that?
Yeah. And so one of the things that so my co-author, Sarah Alaback, learned as she was, you know, digging through the archives and really trying to understand the origins of the name is that alligator pear was it's been used for a long time, but it's understood now to be kind of a just a mispronunciation of the original Aztec name, the Nahuatl name, and Ahuacatl, something like that. And it just got sort of passed along in sort of high-end restaurants, which in like the early 20th century were serving avocado as a delicacy, liked to propagate that word. But there was a USDA botanist who wrote a paper in 1905, and I think he found 43 names for the avocado, including, you know, vegetable marrow and butter pear, custard apple, like all sorts of things. And the USDA finally decided on avocado, and the California Avocado Association, which I had mentioned formed in 1915, had big debates over what to call it. But, you know, and none of these guys spoke Spanish at the very beginning. So that's to be also part of the story. But they they settled on avocado. And that's what we call it in the U.S. today.
So what is the origin of the avocado?
As a fruit,
as an item, as a thing. Yes, exists.
So it goes way back to the, and it's you know, it's indigenous to the cloud forests of Latin America, so Guatemala and Mexico and Honduras and Ecuador. You go through they're part of the story is some of the scientists, especially from the University of California, spent a lot of time traipsing through Latin America looking for examples of wild avocados, they called them, that they hoped they could sort of breed in California to resist pests because they'd been around so long. But there's evidence of, you know, avocados going back into, you know, Mayan sites, you know, thousands of years ago. And they're found... there was a recent study, I think, out of UC Santa Barbara that they were cultivating avocados in Latin America much earlier than had been understood. So it's a fruit that survived a long time.
Right. So how different were those avocados than the ones that I would get now at the store? Yeah. Because, of course, you know, the Aztecs and the pre-Columbian civilizations were master botanists. And they were able to do incredible selection breeding.
Yes. And I, you know, it would be so fascinating. I would love to know what they were tasting, right? And we were blown away learning about just the, and anyone from Mexico knows this, the tremendous diversity of avocados that are out there. So they're like little teeny ones. They're ones that have white flesh. They're ones that taste like sweet, and it's so the Hass avocado that we have, which is in every grocery store, it was was kind of a Mexican Guatemalan hybrid, and it grew up in the Los Angeles area. It's a delicious avocado, but the array of flavors and textures and colors is really mind-boggling. And I think there are something like, I don't want to get it wrong, but there are hundreds of what they call named varieties that have been bred and propagated. And people are always, part of our story is a quest. They're like, it's been a long quest to find like the perfect avocado to bring to market, and the quest continues.
So let's talk about the Haas avocado.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, the story is legendary because this postal worker in California kind of hit the avocado lottery.
He did.
By accident. Tell that story.
Yeah. So the story is that Rudolph Haas, who was originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, he came to California. He was a door-to-door salesman, and he came to Southern California. I'm not sure what drew him there originally, but he ended up buying a couple acres of land and taking out a loan. And there, at the time, this was in the 20s, there was a lot of, everywhere, a lot of advertising around Southern California and land.
I mean, you have to understand the fact that avocados are not true to seed. That is the terminology. So the pit that you might grow, whatever fruit that it would produce is not going to be the exact same as the avocado that you get from the original tree. So the only way that you're able to mass produce something like the Haas avocado is by cloning it or just taking cuttings of it and putting it onto a grafting of another rootstock. And so you would take this scion, the little bit that you take from like the tree, like the Haas avocado, and you would put it onto another rootstock, graft it. You take a little sliver of it and you put it into the stem of the other avocado tree, and then that becomes a new tree. Now, the Haas avocado tree became so popular because it was it had a delicious flavor. It was buttery, and also it was able to transport well. It had a thick skin, so it could do well in the grocery store, and it could do well in being mass-produced and being shipped around the country. So that particular avocado, Haas, named after the man that first planted that avocado tree and got that.
It was this one tree that wouldn't take a graft, and it ended up having this delicious fruit. And Rudolph Haas patented the tree, but it ended up there's another story in the book that we really enjoyed telling, that there was a nurseryman who had the first avocado nursery in Southern California. His name is Harold Hazard Brokaw, and he was the one who partnered with Haas to propagate the tree, because as you mentioned, half was a full-time postman in Pasadena. So the propagation of the Haas, and then that was picked up later by his nephew, Harold Brokaw, known as Hank, who now owns one of the most important, he's passed away, but his family owns one of the most important with spots. You know, they have a nursery in California and Spain and Mexico. And they have been really important pioneers in the avocado business in the world. But it was that partnership that really got the Haas off the ground. And as you said, it ships well, it tastes good. But there was no, it was not foreordained. Like it was disease
resistant, which is something that they're always looking for, because the avocado trees are susceptible to fungus and things.
Exactly. Well, and what the Brokaws did, Hank Brokaw in particular, that was so important, it was he focused on the rootstock. So every avocado tree has to be grafted. It's not, as you had mentioned, it's not true to seed. But what do you graft it onto? Do you just graft it onto any avocado seedling that's popped up? or do you look for root stocks that are resistant to disease? And that's what the BROCAS have been really focused on. University of California has plant pathologists who are focused on that too. So it's fascinating. They're sort of, it's the root and the fruit that both come together to make a tree that's going to survive and bear well.
And so what's like, is it like 95% of avocados consumed in the U.S. are Hass?
Probably more than that. But yes, that's very safe to say. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what Mexico is allowed to import. They're only allowed to bring in Hass or Hass-like fruit. So, and then that's the most popular variety in California and continues to be. I think 1973 was the year that the Hass surpassed the Fuerte, that Mexican variety. But, and now, yes, they're everywhere. But, I don't know. One of the things I'm curious about, and you can, perhaps you or your listeners can tell me, I'm so curious because there was a Texas Avocado Society that was formed in 1948. And, was doing a lot of testing of avocado varieties that might do well in Texas. And I'm super interested to know whether there are still people working on their groves and their varieties there.
Yeah, well, there's a Del Rio variety of avocado trees, which is from Del mm-hmm. Rio, Texas. I mean, so you really have mm-hmm. to get deep down south Texas in order to
yes.
find something. And there, you know, the concern is, you know, being able to withstand a single freeze, and the Hass avocado
yeah.
Cannot, but there are varieties like Joey that can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
it's this
trade-offs. Exactly. Yeah. And that we were reading some of the reports from the Texas Avocado Association, and you're right. They were down near Mercedes, Texas, in that area.
Yeah, that's in the Rio Grande Valley.
Groves. Yes. And they were looking for varieties that were sort of would thrive between the Florida and the California season. So, and would be unique to that climate.
So one question I have is, why does the price of avocados seem to jump around a lot?
Yeah, that's a great question too. And I have tried to figure that out. I mean, there's the basic supply and demand, of course, and there are going to be times where, you know, if the Mexican, growing region has too much water or not enough water, or there's labor issues or whatever, or sometimes there's the shipments get slowed down if there's issues with violence in the growing area. But the price really gets negotiated daily in some accounts as the trucks are coming over the border. And, you know, of course, every time it changes hands, the price gets negotiated again. So the big grocery stores, your Kroger and your Costco, and will have contracts that they negotiate early in the season. But, I wish I had a really good answer for you of why the price is what it is. But it's, I have also noticed just kind of all over the map. And I think grocery stores clearly will drop the price as the fruit ripens because they know they can't sell it once it gets too ripe. So that's what I always look for. I look for the fruit that's like just coming on sale because it's going to be ready to eat.
I've also heard that, you know, an avocado tree, it takes 2 years. Every year it changes how productive it's going to be. It's basically every
yes.
other year. And so because of that, you'll have these really abundant years. And then you'll have the next year, it'll be not so abundant. It'll be scarce. And
that's
so the price
right.
reflects
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So alternate bearing. So they have boom years and then years where it's a little slower. And it's not always, it's interesting because the Mexican industry, the California industry, they try to predict that looking at the orchards and the bloom on the trees and so forth. But the trees can be surprising sometimes. I know here in California, I'm sitting in Santa Barbara County right now, and there was a whole, they called it an off bloom. We had a whole extra pick this year that was kind of a surprise. So, but exactly right. When you look at the volume of avocados consumed in the United States or coming in, it does fluctuate a bit year to year, and that's a result of the trees. The trees don't produce gangbusters every year.
All right, we're taking another break here. We're going to continue our conversation about green gold, the avocado's remarkable journey from humble superfood to toast of the nation. Are you a person who has to have avocado all the time in your diet? Are you one of the people who you've never gotten into avocados? But tell us why. We want to hear your avocado story. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And if you're able to grow an avocado tree in San Antonio, I want to hear about that. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Certainly a favorite fruit of San Antonio, the avocado. We're talking about the book Green Gold, which is actually a avocado breed. Green Gold, the avocado's remarkable journey from humble superfood to toast of the nation. Co-author is with us, Monique Parsons. And you can call in with your questions and comments. We want to hear, really want to hear if you're able to grow an avocado tree in San Antonio. Lots of stories of it, but I just don't know how you're able to do that with the occasional freeze coming down here. 833-877-8255. Let's go to Roxanne. And Roxanne, let's get you on the ready to go here. Hang on. And Roxanne, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just curious about the avocados from Puerto Rico are huge. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but I was just curious what the difference is from their avocados compared to the Haas avocado. Like, why are they so much larger?
Right. Well, Roxanne, thank you for that. And so, Monique, what about those big avocados, like from Puerto Rico or other places?
Yeah, exactly. So the scientists who study avocados have sort of broken them into three categories. And one of them is what they call the West Indian variety. And that's what grows there in Cuba. And like they do better in Florida, too. And they tend to be green skinned and larger and a little like waterier, maybe not as buttery and creamy as the Haas, But I have not held a Puerto Rican avocado in my hand, but it sounds like they're probably bigger than the Haas. Is that right?
They are bigger, about twice as big.
Yeah.
At least.
Wow. Yeah.
And smooth skin and green, as mm-hmm. you say. So, let's talk about the issue of avocados and the questions of the sustainability of it. As demand grows and demand continues to grow, not just in the United States, but around the world for Mexican avocados, there are questions about the deforestation, particularly in the state of Michoacán, the water mm-hmm. use, because avocados need a lot of water to grow. And then mm-hmm. also this is the drug cartels, the blood avocado issue. So what's happening with all that?
Yeah, I mean, I will say it was really interesting as part of this journey of studying the avocado. I was able to go in 2023 down to New Zealand where they held what was called the World Avocado Congress. And every 4 years, there's a World Avocado Congress somewhere where growers and marketers and scientists all convene in some avocado growing region, of which New Zealand is one. And the theme of that Congress, which was, you know, set by an international group was sustainability. So some of that you could say is marketing, but it also was clear that the industry is very aware that they have to implement sustainable practices, and that means different things in different regions. So avocados are now grown all over the world. They're grown in India and Africa, and even in China, and certainly Australia, New Zealand, all over South America. So it's really particular. The climate issues that are most pressing are going to be particular to where they're grown. But they had there was a university in New Zealand that presented a study they had done of their avocado industry down there, looking at everything from water use to emissions, and it was a really interesting model that could be carried over into other regions. But the issue of deforestation in Mexico was highlighted in 2023 by a group called Climate Rights International. They did a big study on this and found that a number of orchards there were not certified or had been, you know, formed by illegally taking over some forested regions. And so
because Mexico's law says you can't kill, you knock down a forest without government approval for agriculture or farm use.
Right. Exactly. And there are these fir forests and pine forests and the Monarch Butterfly Reserve and so forth. And so what that attention, they got a lot of attention on this issue of deforestation there. And now there's sort of an extra layer of scrutiny that's happening, that the you cannot, you know, import avocados into the U.S. from Mexico if they're from, you know, you have to show that they weren't from a deforested region. But it was interesting, you know, one of the books I read on this process was put out by the Sierra Club in 1997, which was the year that avocados from Mexico first came to the U.S. And Mexico at that time was losing more than 2 million acres of forest a year, more than any other nation. So this issue of deforestation didn't start with the avocado, certainly.
Sure, because they're worse offenders. They're worse offenders, like the palm oil industry.
Exactly. And what's been interesting is I spoke to the guys that did this, the climate rights study, and they were saying, you know, the avocado is what they called a charismatic fruit. And so they knew that it would be an interesting place to begin to show climate impact on people and on industries, because they knew it would get a lot of media attention, and it did. It got in the front of the New York Times. But you know, it's a real issue. But it was, as someone writing about the avocado, it was interesting how its charisma kind of helped.
Right, and then but most people don't think about palm oil. I mean, it's in your lipstick and things like that.
Yes. It's hard
biggest
to get people to pay attention.
And, you know, and it's a lot of bad is being done in Central America. Villages are being, evacuated, whereas illegally their native forests are being knocked down for more palm oil. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we said earlier, people want to feel good when they eat their avocado toast.
They do,
and
you're
it
right.
offends their liberal millennial sensibility to think that there's some bad things behind that avocado.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we look at, fair trade chocolate and coffee, and like there are other industries where some practices and standards have been put in place that people can look for. So I think it will be interesting to see if the avocado industry can go that direction to have kind of a stamp of approval of some sort.
Yeah, we did a program on fair trade recently about being fair trade certified and how, you know, whether or not that will go by the wayside. What about the tariff situation with Mexico? So for a while there, like 3 days in March, you know, it looked like we were going to have 25% tariffs on everything coming from Mexico, including avocados. How did that impact the industry?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that there was a lot of concern about that, and probably continues to be. I know I just was reaching out to folks at the Hass Avocado Board, which has, works with every country that's importing avocados into the United States. So they're Peruvians and Colombians and Chileans. And so right now, Mexico does not have a tariff on its avocados. Neither, of course, California-grown avocados don't, but the Peru, Colombia, Chile are paying a 10% tariff. And so far, it's kind of TBD a little bit, because they're all going to be putting out their quarterly reports during the summer, and we're going to see what sort of impact it's had on prices. But it's they're already paying 2.5 cents a pound through this U.S. to the United States through the USDA's run marketing program. So it's not a tax; it's a marketing fee. But if you put a tariff on top of that, it's going to somewhere along the line, someone's going to have to take swallow it, whether it's the consumer or whether it's the packing houses that sell them. As you know,
well, it was a 25% tariff they were talking about earlier. But you know, we do have the USMCA, like, which is the you know, the NAFTA, and so avocados fell under that. And but it was very highly disruptive during those 3 days until
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, there's going to reach a point where people won't pay for an avocado if it becomes so expensive. So it's already not a cheap fruit. And so if that gets tacked on to the consumer price, it could be a real problem for the industry.
So how much water is needed to grow one avocado?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And that's something we looked into. You know, it varies a great deal. So one of the interesting things I found is there's a water footprint network, which is based in the Netherlands, and they estimate it takes about 18.6 gallons of water to produce a single avocado. But I spoke to folks that I mentioned the Brocon Nursery, so they are very ahead of the game in technology, and they have these sensors on some of their trees that helps you calibrate down to the, you know, the droplet, how much water your trees are getting. And they were showing me a report that showed in 2023, one of their blocks of trees consumed only 9.35 gallons per avocado. So it's with careful water management, there can be great variability is kind of what we learned.
So it helps to have comparison. What does that compare to? Like, you know, to like a tomato or something. What do I know?
I don't have like a quick answer to that. I think that's a good question. And one of the things the industry was talking about, people I interviewed were, you know, can we come up with sort of a ounce of water per nutrition kind of metric? Because strawberries take water too. And can you compare the health benefits of a strawberry to an avocado? I don't know.
All right. So we got to take a break here. We're going to come back. I'll get Randall on the air with his question. He's called in. If you got a question or a comment about avocados, how you use them, if you manage to grow one, we want to hear about that. 833-AN-AVOCADO-TREE, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the future of the avocado, the hunt for the next generation avocado, what's being done to improve the avocado. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the trendiest food in America, the avocado. The book is Green Gold, The Avocado's Remarkable Journey from Humble Superfood to Toast of the Nation. It wasn't that long ago that the avocado was basically obscure in America. You've in the 70s and 80s, most people in America had never even seen an avocado, much less tasted one. But when the avocado growers associations, they got organized and they were able to address that, and they were able to promote the avocado, you know, the Super Bowl ads, and they were able to attach it to holidays like Cinco de Mayo. And now you just basically have to have the avocado on certain days of the year. If you've got a question or a comment about the avocado, give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255. And let's go to Randall. And Randall, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I love that intro, the pit of despair. Nicely done, Dave. That was pretty good, the beginning. I wanted to share a dining experience I had several years ago, something that I don't know if it was new. It was definitely new to me. This was in that bougie Metroplex, just a short, frantic, crowded drive up I-35. I'm sorry to say I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but I had a baked avocado. You know, we so often think of avocado as something served cold, you know, like in guacamole and it's, you know, spread cold on toast. But in this restaurant, these people peeled it, split it, and then scooped in chicken, cheese, probably some tomatoes and onions and garlic, you know, typical Mexican flavors. And then they shoved it into the oven. And you got this creamy sort of texture with all of the other flavors and, of course, the chicken and all of that. Man, that was really, really good. It took my mouth a couple of bites to acclimate to this temperature, but oh my, that was really something cool. So it was really good. So if you ever find baked avocado on a menu, take a chance. It's really interesting.
Great recommendation, right. And you're making me hungry, Randall. Appreciate that. So what about different ways people are trying avocados? That's one way that it is taking over America. It's taken, you know, you have avocados in sushi, the California roll, all sorts of ways. People love avocados. I mean, there's cold avocado soup, which is delicious, and avocado ice cream and all sorts of things. So people are learning new tricks all the time with the avocado.
They really are, and it's what you're bringing to mind is how this is a Texas reference, because there's this amazing cookbook archive, which maybe you're familiar with, at the University of Texas San Antonio, that's the largest collection of Mexican cookbooks in the nation. And I found in their digital archive a cookbook from Michoacan that was written by a woman in the late 19th century and had these incredibly elaborate recipes with avocado, with like walnut sauce and interesting, all sorts of interesting ingredients. So I think the sort of experimentation with avocados as an ingredient, because they're so versatile, has been going on for a long time. But you're right, we see them in smoothies and boba tea. And I live now in the suburbs of Chicago, and there's a restaurant there called Avo Theory, with a started by this guy who's just, you know, crazy about avocados. And he does have it's like fried slices of avocado. I think they're, it reminded me of what your caller was talking about, kind of a warm version of the avocado. He has them in samosas, or sort of an Indian influence. So there's a lot you can do. I tried making avocado pudding a few times during this my research, and finally got it right. It tasted pretty terrible my first few tries. But
all right. So I do have an email from a listener. He asks, avocados are a great healthy food source. The problem I have is selecting good ones. Often I buy ones that are very firm. I set them out on the kitchen counter for 3 to 4 days. Sometimes they ripen, and sometimes they're able for a good meal. But then sometimes they go bad. Any suggestions on selecting edible avocados?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something we all struggle with, because you can't tell often when you buy an avocado at the store what it's going to look like inside. And, you know, some of the advice I got from the chefs and the researchers that I interviewed was kind of get to know your produce manager and talk to the places where you buy avocado, you know, find out how long they've been in storage and where they're coming from. And, you know, obviously the fresher, the better. So being there in Texas, you're getting Mexican avocados, you know, that could have been on the tree just a day or two before. So you should be able to find good ones there. But I think it helps to get to know the produce manager and kind of know how long they've been out in the world. It really matters. I used to just, you know, throw an avocado in a grocery bag and hit against the cans in there. And now I'm really much more gentle with them, because the more they get knocked around, even when they're really unripe and hard, the more you can get bruising inside. So treat it gently.
So I've heard you take the unripened avocado, you put it in a brown paper bag, you put an apple or a banana in that same bag, that apple or banana will release ethylene gas, and it will ripen the avocado more quickly.
Yes, it can speed it up. It certainly can. And even if you put a couple avocados together in a bag, they can help each other ripen a little more quickly. And then if you want to slow it down, if it's ripe and it's on your counter but you're not ready to eat it yet, you can put it in the fridge and it will last for a while longer. So
now, you write in your book Green Gold that one of the main reasons why people are reluctant to buy avocados is because of this problem. They're not sure about the ripeness, or if it's rotten, or what they're going to get, and they are working on improving the avocado so it doesn't have that browning impact. Well, talk about that.
Yeah, there's some geneticists that are working on trying to sort of edit the genes of and to take out the things that cause browning. And I guess they did it with, it's been done with lettuce, and now they're working on the avocado. Although the it is very hard to grow avocado tissue in a lab. I visited a lab in at the Huntington Gardens in Southern California, where they are trying to grow avocado tissue culture and see about sort of preserving the genetics of the trees. And the Hass in particular is apparently just very stubborn and hard to grow. So when I read the study about the browning a little more carefully, I realized, like, oh, they hadn't even grown a tree with fruit yet on it. So they're just at the very beginning. So I don't know if on our lifetimes we'll see a non-browning avocado, but we can hope.
But they're working on that, developing the super avocado. What else are they looking for to improve about the avocado?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I mean, there's a lot of research going on. I mentioned the root stocks, and like root stocks aren't as sexy a topic as the fruit itself, but it's really important to develop root stocks that can be resistant to heat and dry weather and so forth. And as they're doing that, they're looking for root stocks that will help make the Hass trees more productive. And so allowing farmers to sort of get more bang for their buck. So if trees planted closer together, smaller trees, more productive trees, that all means like sort of less taking up less resources too. And there's a new avocado that just debuted, which maybe you read about in 2023, called the Luna, that came out of the University of California. And it's on a different flowering cycle than the Hass. So the studies are showing if you plant it among your Hass orchards, it will make those Hass trees more productive. And it's a pretty good tasting avocado. We just had a little tasting event to celebrate our book. And people thought the Luna was pretty good. I think they like the Hass better. But.
Right. Well, you have an A avocado tree and a B avocado tree,
exactly.
And you plant them together so that they will pollinate because of the pollination cycles. So that
flowers kind of those open and close on a slightly different cycle, and that helps the bees and other insects that are going, even the wind that are going back and forth between those little tiny flowers.
So how long does an avocado tree live? I mean, how long can it go?
Yeah, I mean, it can go, it's pretty remarkable. There are trees that could be close to 100 years old. You know, they may not be as productive as they used to be, but we saw down in again, at the Huntington, where there was one of the first commercial orchards in California, they still have some massive trees that are, you know, 6 feet across on their trunks and, you know, many stories tall that are quite something. And some of my neighbors in Southern California, where our farm is, you can see they have some pretty big trees that are well over 50, 60 years old. But these days, people don't let their trees grow as big. They prune them smaller. That's also safer for the people harvesting the avocados. And it can also make the tree
falling
more productive.
Down, even walking underneath an avocado tree. But those things hitching ahead.
Right. Yes.
But so has the avocado peaked? Have we, or is it still growing in popularity?
Yes. I mean, that's a great question. When you look at consumption, so some of the statistics that the Hass Avocado Board looks at, it does not seem to have peaked. It seems to be going up and up and up. I mean, Americans ate to almost 3 billion pounds of avocados last year, and it just keeps growing. So,
and avocado oil also in demand,
exactly.
Being used for things.
Then there's more research going into that too.
Well, the green gold, aptly named because of the demand and because of the profitability, but also the concerns about sustainability, all addressed in the book Green Gold, The Avocado's Remarkable Journey from Humble Superfood to Toast of the Nation. I want to thank you, Monique Parsons, and thank your co-author, Sarah Alaback, for this fantastic book. This is The Source on Texas
Thanks
Public
so much.
Radio. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.